Okay, we're good. We're going to pick up your voice now. Thank you, Jenny.
Okay, I would like to call to order the Aurora Historic Review Board, Tuesday, March 26th, 2024 at 7:12. Do we have roll call, Stuart?
Sure. Chair Jan Peel.
Here.
Co-chair Julie Sixkiller.
Here.
Member Gail Abernathy, not with us yet, and member Richard Goddard.
Here.
Okay.
We thank you. And now we have no visitors. Consent agendas. We had our special meeting on December 11th. Are there any corrections for that particular set of minutes?
Nope.
No.
Okay. Then on February 27th, 2024, another set of board member minutes. I wasn't there, so I'm depending on you guys.
I didn't see anything.
Yeah, I didn't either.
Okay. All right. We're on to new business. Code enforcement in the historic district.
Oh, can we get a motion for that?
Oh.
Yeah, I'll move that we accept the consent agenda.
A second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Sorry about that, guys. Okay. New business code enforcement in the historic district. I don't know that we have anything to discuss under that unless someone has something they want to say.
Nope.
I'll just note that we do have a draft letter for the fence issue we had discussed previously, and Jan and I are going to work on that, probably consult Mayor Asher just to let him know what I'm doing, given that I, you know, report to him with all things code enforcement. To kind of keep him in the loop so he knows what I'm doing. So if council hears about it, they know that what I was doing to stir things up out there, but there's that. And then we've also got a little bit of a sign issue that we're working through with Lisa Hand. So just all the signs there relating to all things Legion Hall and, you know, what goes through there. And so I'll be probably consulting both Mayor Asher and possibly Mercedes Roden-Feely, given that Mercedes had worked with us closely on our sign code revisions previously. So just stay tuned for maybe, you know, kind of a little bit of a follow-up on that, both those issues. So
is that anything where Lisa needs to be making an application to HRB for her banners?
And that's the question.
Times.
Yeah. She's been asked to present to, you know, basically an application for any of the signs that she's, because we don't know really what she has signs for, and
uh-huh.
You know that there are signs and there are maybe even 7 or 8 signs, and it'd just be helpful to know what she's got, and we can establish by way of an HRB decision that we've got a sign, it's a legitimate sign based in code, that we're all on the same page, something to go in the address file so that if there's any questions that come up, as we've had questions recently, we can kind of settle those and be able to move forward. So,
okay. I was just wondering why that would be under the heading of code enforcement if she hasn't even applied to have a sign approved through HRB.
Part of the problem is she's stubborn. She doesn't want to, she just thinks she's doing just fine the way she is, and she doesn't really understand what's going on, but we keep saying, please come to the meeting and we can answer any of your questions. She's not come to any of the meetings, and that's her choice.
Okay. Okay. I get it now.
Yeah. I think what she's referring to, she has banners that she uses for her events, which are the Victorian Tea, and she has another Victorian program she does. And basically, she can have her banners on her property 15 days before the event, as long as she takes them down the next day. But she's not brought us the banners. So we're going to follow up with a letter to her too from Stuart and I.
Oh, okay.
Then next item is design guide project, fence code review. And thank you, Stuart, for including the current one because the one in the book is not current. Does anyone see any changes needed? I know we worked on this with Mercedes and everyone, and I don't know that there's a lot we can do with this. So if anybody has any suggestions, we should discuss them.
I'm just curious on the, so yes, everything in here is what I think you guys made changes before I was on the board, or right after I got on the board, the changes were being made official. Because you added the number two, the flat black metal fencing that was added to the code. What I'm curious about is, so where it says fences not expressly permitted are prohibited. Right?
Uh-huh, unless.
Right.
We love unless.
That's my thing, though. I mean, it's just so, because that's like where we have to make exceptions for certain things. Because I've had some, I think it was, I don't know if I'm going to be able to explain this right. But I mean, we have to be able to make exceptions sometimes, right?
Yes. I mean, look at Castell Court. We were discussing right before. There are 6-foot cedar fences in Castell Court. And the only reason that it is part of the historic district, even though the homes are like, what, 22 years old? There used to be an old church there. There is no old church there anymore. So in a situation like that, we have to make a decision. Are we going to make you put up a picket fence when all your neighbors have a 6-foot cedar fence? So that's what we settled that with one person up there already. So I'm thinking those are the type of concessions we would make. And other than that, it's just going to be kind of what we feel at the time and what we can see and justify. But if they have, it also says, unless there is evidence of a different fence type in the historic records or Aurora Colony Resources inventory. So if they can show us something that says, I don't have to do this, then that would be something we'd consider.
Yeah, that was the exception I understood, is that, you know, they would need to show that there is actually a historic record of the fence type that they're asking for an exception for. And that's only for contributing properties, structures, right?
Well, under non-contributing structures, it says fence is not expressly permitted or prohibited.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so there's not even that sort of historic.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And there would be something, if there was something, it would be in the historic colony resources inventory somewhere.
Yeah, I guess the only thing I'm thinking about this. Oh, like one example would for fences would be my property. Okay. Mm-hmm. So, and let me be very clear on the record, I am not saying any way, shape, or form I think we need to change the code because I'm going to want an exception for my property. That's not what I'm saying here. Because I would recuse myself from anything that had to do with my property anyway, once I bring an application forward. But like my property, for example, if I were to put a 3-4 foot picket fence down along Airport Road in front of my property, it would look ridiculous when I redo my fence up front. Because, you know, what they have up there now is when I moved in, it's that cattle type fencing that has the barbs on it with the steel posts, which is completely against HRB. But I think that's the way it was when HRB was even created, right? I think that fence was probably there before we even became a historic district. I don't know. But a 3-4 foot fence, given the grade of my property and how far the house sits back from the road, it would look like I had put lawn edging in, you know, instead of a fence. So I would be asking for an exception to that rule to have like probably a 5-foot fence with like the 6-foot post, but you know, like a 5-foot fence that had the little dip in it or whatever, like it would be a picket fence. But then if I did something like that when it was approved, then that could, if someone really wanted to delve into it, that could cause a problem, right? Because you can't show historically that my property had a fence like that. And since there's nothing in here that says that we will make an exception for anything except on the metal fencing, if it's for security.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Somebody could definitely say, hey, she was on the board, so they made an exception for her, when it says right in there, if it's not expressly permitted, it's prohibited.
Yeah. Well, I don't read that would, that exception would be allowed under the way the code is written.
Exactly.
So even if you asked for it, I mean, I don't,
exactly. And yet everybody that I've talked to about it says your house would look ridiculous with the 3 or 4 foot picket fence running across the front of it.
Mm-hmm.
Because it would, you know. So I wouldn't do it because it wouldn't be allowed. And then so the option is just to keep up the one that's there, because if I tried to remove it, then I'd have to put in the 3 to 4 foot picket fence. But my point is, aside from me, because I can leave that one up there forever if I need to, right? But there are going to be things like that that come up, because my property is unique, where the spirit of the code has to do with the homes that are on flat land down on Main Street, the quintessential historic home where people are walking. And it needs to be this 3 to 4 foot picket fence so that the visibility of the home is still there. Where even in our code, like a non-contributing house isn't even allowed to have a fence along the front if it's not a picket. It has to be only in their backyards.
Is your house the only contributing structure outside of the downtown area, sort of the Main Street?
Yeah. Yeah, because I think, though, Jan, correct me if I'm wrong, with the one kind of up on the hill at the corner of Ellen and the airport, that one has had so much work done to it, it's not even, can't even really be considered a historic property anymore, can it?
Well, but if it's in the designated area.
I don't know. Is that one, Jan? Is Jan still there?
I don't think so. I'm not sure.
Stuart?
Stuart's muted, looks like.
It's up above on the hill.
Oh yeah. You were muted, so we couldn't hear you. Yeah, the one on the hill, the corner of Ellen and Airport. Because that had so much work done to it, right? That it's not even,
it doesn't even look like the historic home that was there. And
right, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. No.
It's not contributing anymore.
So yeah, my house is the only one really outside of the downtown area, isn't it?
Pretty much, yeah. And you're on a grade that's high. So maybe there's something that we can talk about, property grade for size, you know, for the fencing heights. I don't know if there's something we can do. I mean, if we have the opportunity to change the code.
Well, no, I don't want to change it based on my house, because that would be.
It's not just you. It's not just,
yeah.
There might be other homes up on a hill. You know, it's not just for you. We're talking Aurora.
Is that house within the historic district, though? The one on the corner there?
Yeah. It is, isn't it, Stuart?
Yeah, everything is, but it's not contributing. It's been, like, we've recognized it's been so redone that it's really, it's lost that, from what I understand, it's lost the designation of being a contributing structure in the historic.
Well, but even a non-contributing residential structure cannot have a fence along the front of the property unless it's a 3 to 4 foot white picket fence.
Right. But he doesn't have a fence. He's got a black iron gate. Is that what you're talking about?
Like at the entry to that?
Yeah, but I mean, like, even if they wanted to put up a fence there, they couldn't unless it was a 3 to 4 foot white picket fence along the front of their house.
Correct.
And then they, if they wanted to do along the sides, it would, could only be start at the rear of the house. Cause it can't be along the sides on the side of the house. It has to be to the rear of the house. And then the rear part of the fence would have to be, it all would all have to be shielded from the right of way by landscaping.
Right.
So really my house is pretty much the, really the only one that would be, but see, that's the thing about the code that kind of, and I don't know what we can or cannot do about it, but it's not just for me, but like for the people in Cassell Court. So technically they're non-contributing structures, but they can't. And yet you've got this housing development that was built in 1992 and we've had to refuse them things when it's the parts of their property that aren't visible from Airport Road at all, not visible from my property, not, you know, not, and then they're getting refused things when they're unfortunately part of a, I guess that's a much bigger issue of somehow city councilor, planning commissioner, whoever rezoning the historic district to take Cassell Court out of it.
I don't know. I mean, it seems like the easiest way to deal with this would be to not, you know, change the designation of the historic district, but maybe you create, you know, a separate sort of design overlay for that area. That's, you know, distinct from the design overlay you have in the main, you know, town area, if that makes sense.
Yes. Yeah. Kind of like that area up there is an annex of the
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, I think back to Wilsonville and some of the things that, you know, and so there was like a design overlay, for example, you know, in the northwest area of town that they were trying to develop, you know, sort of similar to like the Lake Oswego kind of area. So they created just a separate design overlay for that area. It was still kind of commercially zoned, but had a different design overlay. So I could see the same thing here. It's sort of designated still, it's zoned, whatever. If it's a zoning issue, you know, historic district zoning, but it's got a different design overlay.
Right.
That's, you know, okay, now 6-foot fences are allowed instead of 4-foot fences or whatever.
Well, and like my one neighbor has a 6-foot cedar fence along the back wall. It's along the side of her house. It's along the back of her house. It's visible from a contributing structure. It's adjacent to a contributing structure.
both
not okay. Across the street from me, beautiful, lovely old couple, they have a chain, black chain link fence at the very front of their property on Airport Road and a chain link gate.
Yeah.
Not okay. But I think because we're out there outside of this area, it's being ignored, I guess. But
yeah, exactly. Because there's an awful lot of things that are not in compliance.
Right. But if it's being ignored because somehow it's been recognized for however many years it's been going on up in this area, that it's been recognized that this area is kind of an offshoot and not really, you know, then it seems to me we need to do something to recognize that so that people aren't, like when Gail was upset about the fence at my neighbor's, well, it's been kind of like that. So, you know, it, maybe we need to recognize this area for what it is and do something about that. And then we, in the future, we won't have, oh, hey, that guy up there has this fence and it's totally against code. So why do I have to do that down here in downtown?
Yeah,
exactly.
So was the agenda item tonight just to talk about taking on a project to review the code, or were we actually going to kind of go through and talk about changes to the, that we'd like to
make? Looking for changes that we want to make. So that this is going to get us to the point where when we do our big project with the next CLG grant to redo our book, these are the things we want to see in that book.
And that way we're ready to go with it. Because from my understanding was that from Stuart's conversation with Curry, that we would need to, we can do the project, and correct me if I'm wrong, Stuart, we can do the project, but we have to be ready with here's our changes, here's our format. We know how much this is going to, you know, we know who our printer is going to be. We know who our computer guy is going to be. Here's how much it's going to cost. We have to justify the amount of money we're asking for when we're applying for the grant. Mm-hmm. And we didn't have all that together.
Yeah. And unless we do all this pre-work, we won't know.
We won't have a basis for an estimate to go out for. So right. The footwork will be something we can present to somebody that can give us an accurate quote for their time to get us to that finish line. And we can present that as a compelling argument for funding through the state. So.
Right. So we're going to review the codes we think we might want to make changes in or improvements to, and then we'll have that done when we want to do the big project. So that's why we're just doing the fences tonight. We thought it would be simple.
Well, I think Rich is right, though. I think it is simple. I think he's right. It's not necessarily changes to the code. It's maybe this idea of a design overlay for, because we have, you know, the residential overlay, commercial, we have these different areas. So maybe, maybe it's something like that.
So it would like Airport Road.
Very also very specific to the fact that my home is still going to be subject to, you know, I'd say probably the majority of the code.
I mean, the only change I heard was that you'd like to have a 1 or 2 foot taller fence allowed.
1 foot taller, yeah. I don't see.
Yeah, because a 3 or 4 foot picket fence would really look ridiculous on my property.
It looked like a little garden fence.
Yeah.
The garden, but yeah, no, it would, because it's the slope to the house and the big trees. It would look silly. It would look silly.
But I'd really like to do it and make an improvement. But I also, I'm on this board, and so I don't want to do anything or have an exception made that could look like something inappropriate was done.
Right. No, I understand that. Yeah.
So I think maybe trying to go through whatever, maybe I can approach the conversation with whoever I need to approach it with.
Yeah, maybe Planning Commission, would they be part of that? Maybe talk to those people about the design overlay.
And see what they think. Because it affects more than just me. I mean, I felt really bad. It was I guess it was almost a year ago now, time flies, when we had to turn down one of the people in Cassell Court about a shelter for his RV. When his HOA, they have an HOA in there that would have allowed it, and it wouldn't have impacted anybody because you wouldn't have even been able to see it from the road at all. It's a house way back in Cassell Court, and we had to say no.
Something should be done, and maybe that's what we need to do, is go to the Planning Commission and present argument.
Because I feel bad. I mean, it's basically my house creating problems for my neighbors.
Well, no, it's not. I mean, you mean because they can't do certain things.
Exactly, because they can't do things because of my house. I realize the historic district was taken up into that area because of the church that was there at some point in history, but given that there's not even one piece of the church left, it doesn't make sense.
We can discuss the design overlay with Planning Commission and see what we can do, because it does create a problem for people, and it's not fair.
Okay.
Anything else?
Yeah, other than that, I mean, I didn't really see anything in the fence code that I saw that needs changing.
Yeah, I put Cassell Court with a big question mark on it on my page. So, yeah, we should follow up on that. Okay, anything else on that? Ordinance. Nope.
What do we want to focus on? What do we want to focus on for next month if we're, you know, it's kind of a secondary topic? Do we want to tackle signs? Do we want to back up and do anything else? Anyone have a suggestion as to kind of a logical approach as we kind of cruise through the balance of this year and start looking at, you know, where this is going? And
yeah, there was one thing that we discussed when we were making the changes, and that was that maybe for landscaping, there needed to be clarification.
I remember that.
Yeah, as far as retaining walls and that sort of thing. So maybe that or signs. Signs will be a biggie, but it's the biggest. It's the biggest problem we have in town. So we can, what would you guys like to do? Do we want to hit landscaping first?
I think that would be good because it would be a good refresher for us too, as we're getting near that season and we may have people starting to come to HRB to talk about their landscaping.
Okay.
We could have an initial conversation about signs. I know that we'll probably need more than one session with signs because it's just kind of a thing, but we might want to maybe after an initial iteration just with the HRB to bring Mercedes in to that once we've kind of fleshed out some of the issues and can maybe invite her kind of legal mind to, you know, help us kind of parse through what we're thinking and, you know, any issue, you know, how do we definitionally approach this and deal with some of the specific issues we found beyond enforcement over this last year or so. We've cleaned up a lot for sure, but
yeah, we cleaned up a lot of, I think the only thing on the sign thing that we changed was allowing the white plastic A-frames. I can't remember too much of anything else that we changed.
I think you guys changed some stuff having to do with the temporary signs.
Yeah, that's true. And political signs.
Political signs, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That was a lot of Mercedes input on those too.
Yeah, I think because the way the code read, you guys were actually targeting political signs, and the way the law reads, you can't target a sign based on its content. So you had to reword the sign codes to make sure you weren't like targeting based on content, but just on placement, duration of time they could be up, size, you know, those types of things.
Yeah. Okay. Well, then let's start with landscaping. I don't think it'll be too much. And if we want to begin signs, we can maybe figure out which sections we want to mess with and put those on the agenda for next month.
I mean, I can include the whole sign code section and we can tackle it and just come with whatever we all
work our way through it.
Yeah, because we know that we're going to have to tackle the whole thing comprehensively. Mm-hmm. But I can put it there just so that we're not shining on any other element, you know, that just comprehensively deal with each section and see
how far we get with each meeting.
You know, one thing I haven't done, Jan, and I think it might be good, is just project out kind of a rough proposed schedule between now and the end of the year, so we definitely hit everything and we know where we might be able to overlap, particularly with signs that are, you know, we know that probably going to take two or three or more sessions, so that we're not so that we definitely make it to the finish line by the end of the year and have covered everything. Just I don't have it in my mind well enough to say, okay, here's the months we have remaining, here's what we think is a reasonable schedule, and can we make it? So,
okay, that would work. That would be very good.
I'll look at that and I'll maybe propose something to you, and we'll see how it lines up with what we've got between now and the end of the year and go from there.
Okay.
Bring that back at least next month. So,
okay. All right. Okay, on HRB member recruitment, I followed up with Karina. She still has not figured out her Tuesday situation. She still is very, very interested in joining. but she doesn't want to let us down. So she's going to, I'm going to keep in touch with her. She said if there's anything that changes, she will let me know. But I think it would be wise to start looking for other people too, because we're supposed to have a board of 5 people. It's hard when you've only got 3, because if somebody's not available, you have no quorum. So
yeah.
I don't know where else to look. But
do we have a post on the city website that the vacancy is, that there's a vacancy or two?
That we're looking for someone. We have it on the water bill every month. And I don't know, is it on the web, on the city website?
I think Tammy did add it.
Okay.
I can go back and.
Yeah, make sure she's got it up there full time.
Sure.
Can we put a flyer on that bulletin board outside City Hall?
That would be a good idea.
Yeah,
we can do that.
Yeah, okay. Or I Love Aurora too. You know, I mean, if there's, I don't see any problem with putting something out there that says, "Hey, there's a vacancy. If anybody's interested."
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we do have that notice. Well, let's see here. Yeah, HRB, Historic Review Board, looking to fill vacancy. That was added back on the 20th of January. So it's kind of buried. It's not on the first 3 posts that you see. So we could see about maybe cleaning that up.
Is that on I Love Aurora or is that on the city?
City website, yeah.
Okay. But
we can look at adding it to the other places as well.
Yeah, I Love Aurora. We might get someone to volunteer. So why don't we try that?
We'll do it.
Okay, cool. Good idea. All right. Well, business, the 2024 certified CLG grant. We've been given an additional $1,500, which is very nice.
Yes.
And I think, Stuart, you have the breakdown pretty much, don't you, as far as... the dollars. It was decided that the museum will get that extra $1,500. I do know that for their project. Then on the other project that we have, Brian Asher is going to be matching funds for his side of the project. We're not asking the museum to do that. So he will be matching funds, I think 25%, isn't it, Stuart?
Yeah, pretty
25%
much that.
25% of the cost is going to be done by him. So I think that's about all we have.
Do you know what the breakdown is, though, of how much of that money is for the museum?
Do we have a dollar breakdown, Stuart?
Let's see here. We have $16,500 total, and there was the $7,800 less $1,900.
What's the $1,900?
Well, $1,900 is the match from the mayor.
Oh, okay. So that stays in there.
That does stay in there. So technically.
Okay, so it's not taking it out.
No, it's not taking it out.
Okay.
At least 8,000 or something for.
So 5,900 then for the chimney project.
Yeah, 5,900 out of the grant. So everything beyond 5,900 of the 16,500 is it goes to the museum.
So $10,600 to the museum.
Over 10,000. That's good. Okay.
Hey, Jan, I had a couple questions on that. You had mentioned that the grant was posted on the city website. I was just curious was posted.
I apologize. No, I checked with Stuart on that, and he said, no, we don't put it on the city website. But here's what happens. When we get a CLG grant and it comes to the Historic Review Board, we're looking at the downtown district, and we did a lot of the CLG grant monies downtown. We had a new roof on my building and a whole bunch of other things done. And now the downtown is pretty much done. So there aren't a lot of projects there. That's why when this hit, we were like, oh, whoa. And we had, 2 weeks to figure out who we could put on this grant? So there were, I asked Karen Townsend, because she's been involved with every CLG grant in town, and she mentioned Brian Asher. She said, let me think about some other places, and she couldn't find anything that she could put her thumb on. So that's how we got to Brian. He wasn't even aware that he was going to be approached about this. And then, of course, the museum, we have, they have to raise, what, Stuart, $70,000 now?
Yeah.
Between now and by the time the grant is up?
Yeah, they had a bunch of other ideas, but they didn't have anything that was really ready to go. Like, you know, that we have to have some information on, that we have to work in partnership to get this loaded into the system. It has to be supported if it's over $25,000 with multiple bids, and they just weren't ready to go. And I'm still waiting on the bids. The state did allow us. Curry was fine with us loading what we did have by way of a bid for the principal building, the Ox Barn building. So that's what the bid that is in the system now, but I've got to get bids for this other, the Giese store. And yeah, if that doesn't, we're going to be establishing by agreement that if they don't come up with something by September, that they will have to have an alternative project ready to go by then. And if not, then we've got to, it would be prudent to have something else independently ready to go should the museum not have something. I mean, I can't imagine that they wouldn't, but the net consequence is we lose the money entirely if we don't have something ready to go.
So.
Exactly.
Do we know how many applications were submitted?
We didn't have any. So again, this is not an inherently competitive, we don't have anything competitive from the state. And from what I understand, we've never introduced a competitive, you know, put it out for bid or followed.
No, I mean, just like people applying for the grant. Do we know how many people applied for the grant? I mean, how many?
No, nobody applied to it to answer or to follow up on what Jan had mentioned. There wasn't anybody but those that were specifically invited, namely the museum and Brian Asher. So we did explore. Yeah, we explored through the museum because we need is one grant player. But then again, we didn't know that we would have the museum when we pursued Brian Asher, because we didn't have anything at that point, and we were getting down to the wire. So we were literally kind of a use it or lose it situation, and figured that we could end up applying.
Yeah.
In kind of this really rough manner for the funds to do the roof for the museum, assuming that they could come up with 70 grand. That may not happen. So
all of the grant money could have gone to the museum. Would that have been an option too? Or
yeah, it's but again, we didn't have the basis for that because they weren't responsive. And I didn't know that we were gonna be going with the museum until late in the game, like the week before or so, before we had to submit materials. I mean, it was kind of like, okay, are we going to do this? And that's why we were scrambling for a secondary party. And that's why we landed with, you know, I didn't want to go with the mayor, frankly, the way it looked, but the way we structured it was that, you know, there'd be match and that we would give the additional funds to the museum that were overage, you know, from the 15,000 that was anticipated. Yeah.
Project.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I understand. I mean, it's just the reality is that, you know, the mayor's got a property in that area. But I have to say, I mean, just because it, you know, the opportunity wasn't made available publicly, it sounds like, and, you know, the mayor was one of two. I mean, even though there's not, you know, there's probably not an actual conflict, you know, at least there's, you know, could be the appearance of one, sure, you know.
Certainly. Yeah. I didn't.
He wasn't even aware of the CLG grant.
Well,
we approached him. The city approached him.
Yeah, I mean, he's been around long enough to know the grants out there and what the cycle is and all. You know, I mean,
he wasn't soliciting this. He is a community member, and sure. To have lost the entire amount, I think it was fortunate that we did have the museum come in. I'm hoping that this works out for their, you know, for them to be able to get the funds. But it's a pretty tough row to hoe to come up with $70,000 when they, I think traditionally have really struggled with finances. We may be looking at a totally different project than we think right now. And that's why we're getting the agreement in place. But yeah, we're trying to kind of make something that, you know, doesn't look the best in the world, that, you know, in conversation with Mary, that we would require that match amount. Curry was suggesting that, and we decided to go with, you know, the 25% figure. And it's roughly 25%. It's, I think it's $50 less than 25% or something like that. But
yeah, normally that type of project would not be matching funds. It would have been 100% covered by the grant. But because he's the mayor, they've done this. So that there wouldn't be any kind of bad feelings about it.
Yeah, good. Thanks.
So my question is, so the CLG grant comes up yearly, right? It's an annual...
Mm-hmm. It's biannual, actually. We took 2 years to do the last one, but this one is on a different timeline given that it's of a development nature. So because it's an actual construction project as opposed to the type of project we did through the museum with the Emma Walk, where it went over the space of a couple of years, this one necessarily wraps in just a full year. I don't understand exactly why. I'm not providing a great response there, but I understand it's an every other year cycle. So there won't be more funds for another couple of years.
Oh, so this won't be available next year for our book project?
Yeah.
Oh.
And maybe what we should do is our secondary option in case the museum doesn't get everything together is try and get our stuff together.
Yeah, because I was under the impression that we would have the go at this next year because we were missing out on it this year because we were cutting it so close.
Yeah. Was the museum's Emma Walk actually a CLG grant, or was that from the state?
It was through the same program.
CLG,
yeah. The same exact program. But it's just, it's the nature of the project, and we would be applying next year following. I mean, I think it turns into an every other year thing just based on, because you've got a full year to complete the project, and then you can go ahead and apply, you know, for the following year. So, I mean, there's going to be a little bit of lapse. It's not like a year for year for year for year type thing, but the way it shakes out that we'll finish next summer and then give 6 months till the next, you know, the materials come out for the next grant, and you've got to get them in by whatever it was, February. Yeah. So it opens in December. So technically in the same, you know, 6-8 month window that you're finishing the project or several month window, you've got a new grant cycle that's queuing up for the second. So it's not,
wouldn't that be, so December, wouldn't that be 2025 though?
Yeah, I mean, you'd be getting funding in 2025. So
okay, all right.
Yeah.
All right.
Okay.
So I guess I kind of see what Rich is saying. Well, I see what Rich is saying, though, also, because it was a little confusing, I'll be honest. We were talking about the book project. And then at the very next meeting, the museum was there, and we were talking about Brian's project. And I know that was something I think that must have been being discussed outside of the meeting, because that was a surprise to me when people showed up at the meeting, when I thought we were talking about doing the book with that money. So like maybe once we get all of this underway and we know how much this project's going to cost us, then when we know how much potential money is there, maybe we can start thinking about it sooner. And then if we know our projects, let's say it's going to cost us $8,000 and we know there's 7,000 potentially, maybe something to the, you know, to people in the historic district, letting them know, hey, there's $7,000. If you have a project or, you know, something, you can apply to or send a letter of interest or whatever, explaining your project to the HRB, and we're going to make a decision and grant somebody you know, the opportunity to apply for part of this grant. And then we can apply on their behalf.
We're asking them for something they're not guaranteed to get, so aren't we?
Well, we're asking them if they want to, if they're interested in trying to, but we're going to know what the parameters are, and we're not going to submit for it if we know it doesn't fall under the proper parameters, right?
Right. Yeah.
Because if we're running out of projects, then maybe if something doesn't come to mind and we do it soon enough, we can actually put it out there. And they know that, you know, they're going to have to submit something, and HRB will take under consideration all the projects and vote on one to put forward that year.
Okay.
Or something. Yeah.
If the museum doesn't come up with their match, I mean, they're...
No, we're talking about for like the next time we go through this process. So it's a little more transparent, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah, that's fair.
Well, what we could do, don't we have a listing or a mailing of all the historic homes? I know they used to send the water bill out with a different color water bill. So we know there has to be a designation somewhere in the computer system where we could possibly just send something out to people who have contributing historic homes.
Yeah, it could be just a little, like a half sheet or something that just outlines the program. Mm-hmm.
This opportunity may become available, and, you know, some of the parameters that we might set out there, and is there anything that you feel might qualify?
Yeah, I mean, I think that I like that idea of just being more transparent. I mean, and maybe this is just my own sort of lack of awareness, but, you know, I was thinking this is something that, you know, folks would want to make visible to people who potentially would qualify for the grant. And it was surprising to me that we didn't make more of an effort to sort of make people aware that this was out there. And it just sort of feeds into the potential.
Didn't we have a crunch on timeline though with them?
Well, but I mean, we know it's coming, like, you know, some cycle. So
I'm sorry.
Well, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, maybe we have an opportunity to get in front of it.
I'm cutting out here. What am I doing? I'm sorry. I didn't hear that, Rich.
Oh, it's just, you know, suggesting maybe we have an opportunity to get in front of it a little bit more next time, you know, if we know.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Cyclist.
Yep. That would be a good thing.
Yeah, happy to work with Tammy. We can, I mean, I don't know if we've mailed out with the water bills. We've done the kind of the blue bill before, and mm-hmm. and that we can just kind of section that out and send something, you know, that just gives a bit of a synopsis and a range of what the funds look like, and just, you know, the process as we've discussed it, you know, as to, you know, the HRB making a decision on this at, you know, X date, you know, whatever meeting we'd want to, so we can kind of look at the next process and introduce a little bit of a, you know, kind of, you know, I like the idea of making, because it takes the pressure off of staff to try to figure this out, you know. You know, this is the way that it's always been, and I hadn't really considered you know, doing it any differently than just simply reaching out to the, you know, the source of projects is very kind of a very natural thing, as opposed to going to individual homeowners or anything like that. But I like the idea of mailing it out, and we can kind of narrow it down to, you know, a maybe a set of projects or a single project that would be able to use those funds and make an impact. Yeah. So that's a great idea.
When it just dealt with the downtown district, this is the first time it's been available to residential. Most of the CLG money has always gone to the downtown district because it's the focal point of the historic district.
And it's also visible.
The first time we've had money available or used money for anything beyond downtown. So it's a little different situation, because when we look at downtown, we can pretty much tell what's falling apart. If mm-hmm. you go through the neighborhoods, we have no clue. So I think that making it public would be a really good thing at this stage, because that's what we need to start working on, because downtown's fine.
From what the sense I got was that it either needs to be very publicly visible. I mean, the chimney worked for, and Curry was able to do that. But when you get inside of a residence and it's not publicly accessible, that's where the challenge comes.
Right.
So, you know, being able to see a chimney, it's just a chimney. It's nothing, you know, inside of a building. So it's, that worked for Curry's purposes, but yeah, we'll have to work with her and get things vetted with ideas or applications that would come in and make sure that any project that proposed work for sure.
Well, but that's the thing. Even if they don't work, we've at least put it here. Here's what it is. Here are the parameters. And then it's like, well, sorry, we put it out there a bit, nothing fit. And so we've done this instead. Or, yeah. And if we're saying we're saving, well, like we'll parse off some of the money for a project we want to do, be it the cemetery or, you know, our book, which I think is a priority, because it's not, I know Gail seemed concerned that we were trying to reinvent the wheel with the book, but it's not really that we're trying to change it as much as we're trying to modernize it and make it more user-friendly. Yeah. You know, so, and make those changes that make it more user-friendly, which translates to the public's perception of HRB. Because they're not going to be so confused and coming angry and pulling their hair out that they don't understand something if it's more user-friendly to begin with. So
I agree. Okay.
Yeah. I think it would be good to, you know, try to avoid this sort of, you know, at least the potential for a perception that it's only, you know, kind of the insiders that have access to the money, you know. And I would view kind of the mayor and the museum as folks that are pretty familiar with city, you know, processes, and probably would be sort of viewed as, you know, insiders, if you will, for lack of a better term. And, you know, this is public money that really should be available to anybody that's, you know, in the historic district. And part of it is just, you know, helping them become aware of it. But I think the other part too is just being clear on kind of what the decision-making process is, because, you know, we're talking about HRB making a decision here, but it didn't really feel like in this case it was HRB's decision, you know, where the...
Well, actually, Curry will make the final decision on it. She's the gal from the CLG. So she makes the final decision. All we can do is look at it and say, yes, this looks like it falls into the parameters. And then she can come back and say, oh, but however this, and then you're starting over again.
Yeah. So I don't know that really what value the HR is adding there, you know, really. I mean, it gets right down to it. I mean, we didn't really have any discussion about the museum or, you know, the chimney project until it was sort of a fait accompli, you know.
I think we were having difficulty figuring out what to do with the money to start with, because it just felt like a lot of pressure to get this one going for some reason.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
Yeah. Enough.
Yeah, the people I reached out to at the museum, there was Mike Burns. He was out of town. There was a lack of traction to find, you know, up against the deadline. And it's like, have a lot of time, and it was either we could have just let it go and just, you know, waited till the next season too. It just was an attempt to harness the funds for something in the meantime and get it going and make it happen. So that's exactly what I did. And that's basically what I did the last time too. Just we reached out, we had a project that was pretty primed, the Emma Walk, and, you know, and I don't know that it's ever been any different, but this is an opportunity to maybe change that up, and I welcome that.
Yeah.
So
yeah, sounds
good. Thank you.
Okay, I think that's a great idea.
Great.
Okay, any further discussion this evening? Anything you want to talk about that isn't on the agenda? Are we all done?
Nothing here.
Done? Okay, I have nothing further.
Yeah, thank
Julie.
You guys. Appreciate it.
Nope, nothing further here.
All right, then I am going to adjourn the meeting at 8:06. Thank you guys for all doing this, and I'm sorry I didn't get my Zoom picture up.